Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Shamita Basu, a reporter in the newsroom here at WNYC, sitting in for Allison Stewart today. Mother Joffrey introduced the world to Indian food through her cookbooks, seven of which won James Beard Awards, and her popular cooking shows. In her latest book, Mother Joffrey's Instantly Indian Cookbook, she shares over 70 recipes for the Instant Pot. Everything from classics like butter chicken and dal to Goan-style shrimp curry. Mother Joffrey, welcome to All of It.
It's wonderful to be here.
And I already said to you just when you walked in, but as a child of immigrants, I cannot bring myself to call you by your first name, so I'll call you Mother G if that's okay.
Well, thank you.
Let's start by talking about what the Instant Pot is and what it isn't. Because you write in your introduction to the book that pressure cookers are a staple of most Indian kitchens, sometimes more than one, typical for making dals and meats. Well, how is an Instant Pot different from a pressure cooker, and how is it similar?
Well, it's all electric, for one thing. And the second thing is that the pressure cooker does one thing. You can put several ingredients in it. Like in India, typically you'll put your rice and you'll put your dal, which is your split peas, and you may even put a vegetable, and you just straight cook them, and then you season whatever you need to season afterwards, after they come out of the pressure cooker. So you can tear them up in a pressure cooker. An Instant Pot is not quite like that. It's a pot that can do many things. It can sauté, it can steam, it can make rice, it can slow cook, it can pressure cook at high and low. So it's a pot that is not a magic pot, because you have to learn how to use it. You have to learn when you use the high pressure, when you use the low pressure. And there are tricks to getting even your eggs come out absolutely perfectly if you're doing boiled eggs. If you want them slightly hard or very hard, you can manage all these things. But it's a bit of trial and error. And you have to try your pot and work it out. And each pot is slightly different from the other. So what I say is that it's not a magic pot. It's another big tool, a wonderful tool that can do hundreds of things if you use it right. Now, they do come with their own little booklets.
The instruction manual,
yes,
of sorts.
Yes, I think you should read them more for safety instructions and things like that. But then use a book like mine that will tell you how to actually cook. For example, for Asian food, we don't want our rice al dente. Forget al dente for Asian rice.
Right, right.
So we want it properly cooked. So what I do is I use the rice. There's a button for rice.
And you're saying that setting usually makes it a little too hard?
Well, according to the directions that they give for water in the booklet, it's too little water, or you do something else. So what I have worked out is that you do your Indian thing. You wash it and you soak it. And then you put the correct amount of water, which I suggest, not what they suggest, and put it in the pot. And then you push your rice button, and then it just cooks by itself. And people who have, so many Americans have said to me, I can't cook rice. It never turns out right. And I say, well, follow this recipe, and I guarantee it'll turn out right. Your basmati rice, the grains will elongate. It'll be aromatic. It'll be
fluffy,
perfect.
Yeah.
And then you can also ruin it when you serve it. Because people mash it around, they stir the pot, and you say, don't do that. So you go straight in with a spatula down one side, and then turn the spatula at right angles and go the other way and take the whole thing out, and then break it with the back of a spoon, this whole lump that you pick up. You break it very gently so you don't, you know, cut up.
So it naturally comes apart, right?
Yes, it naturally comes apart.
So tell me, how did you end up writing this book of Indian recipes for the Instant Pot? Is it that you used an Instant Pot and instantly fell in love with it and its possibilities? Or how did you come around to writing this book?
Well, it was quite against my will,
really?
Actually. It wasn't something that I turned to naturally. I had worked with pressure cookers, and I was very happy with pressure cookers. And I always cook my chickpeas, for example, in a pressure cooker. I found that so much easier. and my whole beans and things like that. I'd always cooked in pressure cookers, which I have. But my editor at Knopf said, we would love you to do an Indian pressure cooker, an instant pot book. And I said, you do? This is Knopf, you know, this very high-tone publisher. That my editor before that didn't even want me to write a book that had simple in its title or easy in its title. She said, no, we don't do such things at Knopf. So this was new. So it was a new young editor. And she realized before I did that the instant pot could be used to make anything, and it could be used to make Indian food. So I was at that time rushing off to do something, a TV series in LA. And she said, just before you go, just do this book. Just do it. Do it quickly. So I said, fine. But then I had to study the instant pot. I had to work on it. As I say, it's not a magic pot. You have to work. You have to try and get it right. See, because the booklet doesn't tell you really how to, when you should use high pressure, when you should use low pressure, what the difference is. So I had to work it all myself. So that's what you see in the book. My work, working out and trying to make, for example, cauliflower. I mean, you think it'll turn to mush, but it doesn't if you do it right. I cook it at low pressure for 1 minute.
For one minute.
So you just have to know what you're doing. Try it out. Otherwise, follow my book, at least for the recipes I give. Otherwise, you work it out.
Are you usually, do you think, gadget averse? Do you not like introducing new gadgets to the kitchen?
I love gadgets. However, they're too many. And no kitchen is ever big enough. Mine have always been the worst, littlest kitchens.
Well, you're speaking to New Yorkers, so definitely we know. I guess that's really my question. Like, how do you decide when a gadget rises to the level of making room for it in your kitchen?
Right. So what happens with the gadgets I use the coffee grinder for my spices and for my coffee. So that's there. And then I use things like microplanes and, you know, a lot of things that you can shove into a shelf. The instant pot, I have to take into another room when I finish with it. I bring it back and cook with it, because when I'm cooking with it, I don't need anything else. So it's the only pot being used at that time. So I just have to take it out of the kitchen, because I too have no room, you know, for hundreds of pots.
Sure.
But I have hundreds of pots.
You just have them, even though you don't have the room for them. Were there any Indian recipes that you tried very hard to adapt to the Instant Pot, but that just didn't work?
Well, at first, I was trying a lot of fish dishes. I said, okay, all these books have very few fish dishes because it's hard to do. But then, again, working with it, I realized that I don't have to cook the fish under pressure. I can make the sauce under pressure, and then there's the sauté part of the gadget. So I just poach the fish in the sauce, and then that's all it's needed. For example, those lovely Goan shrimp dishes that you get on the beaches of Goa.
Yes.
I can make the sauce quite easily. And then I put shrimp, I just slip them into the sauce and cook them for just a few minutes, you know, because they don't take long to cook.
I have dreams of that Goan curry.
Oh, I love it. Let me tell you. I love it. It's in the book. It's in the book.
That's great. Let's talk about a few more recipes in the book, actually. So you have, there's your recipe for mulligatawny soup.
Oh, yes. Again, now that is another one. I find that you can use this. Mulligatawny soup thickens with chickpea flour. And its main ingredients are ginger and garlic, and of course, goat or lamb. That is the. But you can use it. But the only thing to remember is that you can't put thickeners in the beginning. You have to put them towards the end when you're doing the sauté function for the last time. That's when you slip in all the thickeners, because otherwise it doesn't work very well.
You have another recipe that you call my mother's red lentil soup.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about this recipe and why it's so special to you.
Well, my mother, you know, growing up in India, I grew up certainly when it was British. It was a British colony, and I grew up in schools that were part British. They were run by missionaries. And the food we ate at home they would say, oh, now we're having Indian food and now we're having English food. And English food was generally a roast of some kind. Uh-huh. And then there was a pudding of some kind. And there was a soup, because we all thought no Englishman worth his salt can live without soup. So my mother Indianized a lot of the soups. And one of them was the red lentil soup. And she Indianized it, first of all, by putting turmeric in it. And she didn't put too many spices. The one main flavoring, other than the turmeric and a little chili powder and the salt, was a little bit of clove.
Mm.
And that just, the aroma of that clove just did it. And then we squeezed lime juice at the end. And
so
that
how
was
much,
it.
How much have you changed the recipe since your mother was making it?
I do it by taste because I don't know what she did, actually.
Okay.
Is what my memory of it is.
Yeah.
At that age, I wasn't going into the kitchen even. But I remember the taste so vividly. And it was that scent of cloves that I remember. A tiny bit of heat because we were children. And in the end, the lime juice.
You include a few different dal recipes in the book. That's recipes for beans and
black-eyed
peas. All sorts of things like that.
Yeah.
And I was so curious because I've been looking through your book. I don't have an Instant Pot myself, but I've been looking through your book. And I was so curious how you were going to go about this in an Instant Pot, because even with pressure cooking the dal, a very crucial last step
is the tarka.
Do you call it tarka? We call it chonko in my house.
We call it chonko. We call it both.
Can you explain that for our listeners and how you've adapted it into the steps of making dal with the Instant Pot?
Well, you see, you can do it in the beginning. That's one way of doing it. You turn the sauté function on, and then you put in your oil. Unfortunately, in the Instant Pot, it goes to the sides, but you can still do the tarka, and then you put in all the whole spices, and you have it on high, and you put in the spices, and they will pop to a degree, mm-hmm. and then you put the dal, and then you cook it. Or forget it. Go do the last step on your kitchen stove. Get a small frying pan and do it there and put it into the dal. There's nothing that says you can't mix and match, you know. You have the stove sitting there. You don't have to wear blinders and say, I'll use nothing else today. You just go to the stove and do your tarka in a little pan like you would normally do.
Sure. No rules. There don't need to be rules around it.
Why?
It's just an additional tool. It doesn't need to be the only tool.
Yeah, exactly.
That you use
exactly.
A few of your recipes are sort of surprising for the Instant Pot, like your spicy fat fries, which you don't deep fry, actually.
Yes.
Tell us what you do, what the process is, and how you make them crispy.
Well, you can end up by putting them in the oven. You do all the other steps. You steam the potatoes, you put the spices on them, and you can end up in the oven. But the sauté part, you can also do in the sauté, with the sauté app, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But don't be afraid. At the end, just shove it in the oven and let them brown further. You know, I'm all for mixing things and making life easy. So you don't have to, as I said, wear blinders and stick to the Instant Pot for every aspect of your cooking that day. Use something else.
One thing that struck me in the book was I noticed there are many specific and very tender instructions. For example, you write, open the lid carefully, venting the steam facing away from you.
Because I have got burnt.
Oh, really? So these
because
come from
a place you can be careless.
Yeah.
And you suddenly open the pot and the steam is very ferocious.
Mm.
And I've had it come at me and I have got burnt.
Ooh.
So all you have to do is tilt the lid and make sure it's just facing on the to the other side. So it doesn't come right in your face, but it goes the other way.
And you even write, you know, for things like the tarka step, this will splatter, so stand back, wear oven mitts for the step. And it was so nice. As I was reading the book, it made me sort of feel like I was cooking with my mom or my grandmother, who might say things like this.
I'll tell you why I do this, and I've done this since the beginning. I did not know how to cook till I was 20. And my mother wrote letters to me, and that's how I learned. I was in England studying drama. And I learned through my mother's letters. They were 3-line recipes, and they didn't give too many details. But I thought, somebody's learning how to make this the first time. They're going to kill themselves. They're going to be splattered all over. And every problem that arose, I said, it's my job to not let this happen to the person who's cooking, because it happened to me. Now that's it. The person who's cooking is going to have their life made much easier by me. I'm doing it now.
What do you think you're like in the kitchen when you're cooking with someone else? Do you like having someone else in the kitchen with you, or do you prefer just working alone?
It depends. If I'm making a big, I'm concentrating on some dish that's going into a book, I would, if somebody wants to cut and chop, fine. But the cooking part I need to concentrate because I'm testing, writing down, weighing, and doing everything at the same time.
You're working.
And the concentration is, you know, complete and deep. So I would rather do it on my own. But if I'm making puris, which I love, you know what puris are? They're these, for the audience, I'll tell them. They're the little breads that you make with whole wheat flour, and you roll them out to about 5 inches or about 5 inches. You roll it out flat like a tortilla, but then you deep fry it, and it puffs up like a little balloon, and they're just absolutely fattening and wonderful
and
to eat. And wonderful to eat. So when I'm making those, there's the rolling, there's the frying. So I love it if all my grandkids come, my daughters come, and we're all in the kitchen and everybody's rolling and we're frying them very fast. It's just a pleasure to do it. And that's the first thing I taught the kids when they started to cook. And that's the first thing my grandkids also did. Rolling out the puris is one of the earliest things we all did together.
Mataji, you are, for many Westerners, their decades-long teacher and guide to Indian cooking. And you write in your introduction to this book, the foods in this book are very Indian, but you may eat them in as American a way as you like. Can you talk a bit about why you wrote that and what your philosophy is on whether there is a right or wrong way to make another culture's cuisine?
Yeah, that's a sort of wonderful and eternal kind of question. Because food moves. Ingredients move. They go from country to country to country. They originate somewhere and they end up miles away in a completely different form. You can't hold it and say, I'm going to keep it here. Nothing's going to change from here. It's like language. You know, language is going to move from one country to another. It'll change. It'll adapt. Our own Indo-European tongue moved from the Caucasus all the way to Ireland. And how it changed. Look at my name. My name is Madhur, which comes from Madhu, which means honey, sweet as honey. Mm. That's my name. But you look at the word for honey, which is Madhu in Sanskrit, then you have the mead came from honey. Miela came from honey. And I was in Ireland and staying at a place called Ballymaloe, and the Malu is also honey. The D changed into an L, as we all know. And so it's the same with food. It moves, it changes, it adapts and becomes part of what the people of that country eat. If you think of the potato, it originated in Peru and Bolivia. And look at what we do with it. Then people can say, well, that's not what you do with a potato. That's not what the Peruvians do. But why should we do what the Peruvians do? We are Indians and we will do with the potato or the tomato, which also came from the West, what we want to do. So I think what's happening in America, but America is very young. The people who were old here have been scattered and their lives have come to naught, which were the original Native Americans. And the people who've replaced them have only been here for 200-300 years. Nothing. That's nothing in the lifetime of a cuisine. So we are in the process of setting it up. And people do whatever they want. Fads come, fads go. And in fact, people predict what the next fad will be because they're so used to them coming and going. What will be the essence that stays? We don't know. It's too early. But I already see my writing on Indian food, which is sort of purist. But I too have dishes that are slightly Chinese and slightly this because I was already adapting and changing things as when I came to America. I'd fly to Malaysia, I'd eat something, then I'd try and combine that with Indian food, and that would be a dish that I created. But Malaysia is creating Indian dishes that are also mixed, you know. So America is, it is natural that things will evolve and they will change, but the young people, people your age, for example, are writing the books that are true to them. And they are writing these mixed books, Indian chapatis and roti serve as pizza.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's what's going to happen. It'll change, adapt, and hopefully become a very, very wonderful, interesting cuisine. It hasn't happened yet.
I would be remiss if I did not mention your career as an actress, both in the theater and on screen. And I have to ask you about this music video that you recently appeared in just a few months back. The song is by a New York rapper who goes by Mr. Cardamom. The song is called Nani, which means grandmother. And you play this title character, the Nani, who is a total boss and kind of moves around all these iconic Daisy spaces in New York. I wish we could play some of it, but honestly, we would lose our license because it's just got so much. There's a whole lot going on. It would have just been a series of bleeps. But tell me why you got involved in that project, how you got involved in that project, and where your acting career is now.
Well, I've always done both. I've always acted and written books. I started writing books when I couldn't get decent acting work. That's how I, when I came to America, there were no good parts to be had. And I said, I'm not going to play the sort of Middle Eastern Oriental mystery girl, you know, and dance around camels. And I'm just not going to do that. And I said, what else can I do to make money? I had three little children. And so I started writing. And I started writing on any subject that I knew anything about. So I could write about theater. I could write about architecture, sculpture, painting, all these things. I painted. I was interested in a whole bunch of things that I knew something about. And then one editor said, would you like to write a piece about what you ate as a child? And I did that for, I think, Holiday magazine at that time. And that just took off, and I started this other food career.
I have a quick question, actually, from a listener that's just tweeted at us and has been listening, who is a big fan of yours, and asks if you would talk about if you found any ways around the dreaded burn alert when cooking with tomatoes in the Instant Pot. Have you ever had this happen to you?
No. Okay. What is the burn alert? I'd like to be alerted.
Mother Gia has found a way around the burn alert, so it hasn't even occurred to her yet. But she has plenty of other instructions in her book around how to not get hurt or when you're handling
the Instant Pot. Stay away from the burn. But I don't know when you get it or how you get it.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah.
You were recently in an NBC sitcom.
Yes.
I feel good.
I feel bad.
I feel bad.
But you can still see on Hulu.
And has it been renewed for a season two?
No, it has not been picked up, which is very sad.
My guest has been Mother Jaffrey. Her latest book is called Mother Jaffrey's Instantly Indian Cookbook, Modern and Classic Recipes for the Instant Pot. And on Tuesday, June 4th at 7 o'clock, she will be at the 92nd Street Y for an event. It's on immigration and food. She'll be in conversation with Sonia Chopra. So writer, actor, and as they said in the rap video, number one Nani, Mother Jaffrey, thank you so much for coming in and joining us on All of It.
Well, thank you for having me.